Hello and welcome to HCM Cloud Talk Radio, where you get the latest in HCM Cloud best practices and information which are important for your Oracle HCM Cloud service. I'm Frank Howe, Director, HCM Cloud Development, and a member of the Center of Excellence team here at Oracle. I would like to welcome two guests here in the studio for our show today, Stuart Felsted and Ben Liddell. First, let me introduce Stuart Felsted, Oracle Consulting Leader of the UK and Ireland Security Practice. Stuart's been with Oracle for the past 22 years. He has always worked in a delivery role and has been a leading figure in the security space for more than a decade. Today, Stuart is head of Oracle's security practices and responsible for the delivery of Oracle industry-leading on-premises and cloud security capabilities. He also ensures that a risk-based approach to architecture, design, and delivery is adhered to across the whole of Oracle Consulting so that Oracle's transformation cloud projects are delivered for customers in secure and compliant ways. Stuart, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be here on HCM Cloud Talk Radio.
It's my pleasure.
And also here in the studio today is Ben Liddell, Oracle Consulting Leader of the UK and Ireland Digital Practice. Ben has been working for Oracle for the past year and has spent the last 20 years working with organizations large and small. He spent most of the last 10 years helping customers with their challenges around permission-based marketing. In his current role as head of Oracle Consulting's digital practice, Ben is responsible for enhancing Oracle's customers' value from their Oracle and non-Oracle estate. He does this by leading innovation and development of modern interfaces that leverage Oracle's leading edge technologies, such as chatbots, machine learning, and the development and delivery of new and intuitive end-user experiences. Ben, welcome to the show. I appreciate you taking time to join us here in the studio today.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
I'm looking forward to our discussion today with Stuart and Ben about the never-ending tale of finding the chinks in an organization's GDPR armor. So my first question is to Stuart. GDPR has been in force for the last 12 months. Isn't this old news now?
I think the simple answer is yes and no. I think everybody is aware of GDPR, and I think a lot of organizations put a lot of effort into meeting the bare minimum requirements of compliance about 12 months ago. And at Oracle, we did a great job of helping our customers achieve that with the implementation and execution of projects in the technology space. We enable them to encrypt data. We enable them through patches and upgrades to improve the compliance of the applications that our customers had deployed across their estate. But I think it's only now organizations are having to live with GDPR as a day-to-day process where their organizations evolve over time, applications are enhanced, improved, and often retired and replaced, that the real challenge of maintaining that GDPR and compliance position and improving on it and removing any risks from their estate is really starting to be recognized as an ongoing activity that's going to take many years, I think, a lot of organizations to really get a grip of.
Okay, great. So, Ben, could you elaborate for our listeners on what that means?
Well, it's really a question of what do you do first? And like all compliance frameworks, the focus is to get through the first audit with the minimum amount of non-compliance. And that's often done by taking a snapshot of the state of the business in readiness for the audit and then supporting the auditors. They trawl through the reams of data and systems to validate that evidence. And we've seen this before. Organizations have been through this before with other compliance frameworks. So things like PCI DSS, Sarbanes-Oxley, Basel II. And really, it's a two-stage process. The first stage is getting through that initial audit successfully with the minimum of non-compliance. The next phase after that, as you move into a business as usual phase, is to ensure the compliance processes across the enterprise.
Okay, so Stuart, how do you think most organizations fared in that? And has anyone actually been fined for non-compliance?
I suspect the answer is probably not as well as everybody would have hoped. Given that the European Data Protection Board processed over 200,000 cases in the first 9 months of the legislation being active, it's more than 20,000 a month, is what I would consider to be less than an ideal situation. But I think, you know, if you break those numbers down a little bit, 100,000 of those were complaints. And the EU's got a large population. So as a proportion of the population, it's a relatively small number. And possibly a lot of those complaints were related to the same instances or against the same organisations. But perhaps more concerning in terms of numbers, 65,000 were related to data breaches that were announced by data controllers. And I think that kind of feeds into the wider cybersecurity conversation about breaches are almost inevitable for most organisations nowadays, and ensuring that you've got the right controls in place to manage when those instances occur, and that you are aware of the risks in your organisation and are continually trying to evolve your security posture to remove or minimise the realisation of those risks is absolutely key to any organisation's GDPR compliance success. In terms of fines, in the same period, the EU issued almost 56 million euros worth of fines. But I think, again, that needs to be put into context. 50 million euros of that number was the France Sinal case against Google, which is currently being appealed and will no doubt change in value as that appeal process continues. But I don't think that gives us the position or the sense that we should be compliant. Yes, it's only 6 million euros, but regulators have been very clear that, you know, they're just warming up at the moment. They recognise it's a new piece of legislation. They recognise the challenge organisations face in trying to put in the processes and the controls and modernise the technology estate to allow them to run in a compliant way. But they're not going to continue to be lenient forever, and I think organisations need to be aware that the likelihood of being prosecuted, the size of the fines that are being issued, especially for those organisations that aren't really addressing GDPR at all, the patience is going to reduce, the likelihood of prosecution is going to increase, and the penalties associated is most likely going to increase as well.
So it sounds like there's still quite a lot to be done. How would you go about making those next steps? And do you have some advice for our listeners?
I do. I think everyone's aware that the three kind of major tenets of GDPR are around consent management, making sure that when we capture and process data, the data subject, you, the citizen, the individual, have given the data processor, the person that's capturing and processing your data, the permission to use the data in the way that they intend to use it. The second one is the right to disclosure. So my ability to ask any organisation what information they hold about me, how they use it, why they've got it, where it came from, make sure that it is up to date and valid information, and make sure that the consent that I've given that organisation aligns with the way that they want to use it. And the third one being the right to be forgotten. So understanding that I can ask any organisation to remove my data at any point in time, and the organisation's ability to be able to respond to that request. Now, just because I say I want you to delete my data doesn't mean that the organisation can legally do so. I might have some kind of contractual agreement with them. I might have a financial agreement with them, and legislation mandates that therefore the data needs to be held for a period of time, often beyond the time that the contract's in place. So, you know, financial regulation requires for money laundering purposes that you retain data for an extended period. But I can still raise the request today, and when that legislative period has expired, the organisation has to act on my request and remove it. So being able to track rights to be forgotten and process those is a pretty big challenge for most organisations. And whilst there are other complexities to be considered around this, you know, being able to find the data and track the data and understand your policies and processes around it, the key thing for organisations is they need to have somebody in post to do that, data protection officer or DPO. They're already in post for any organisation that's taking this seriously. And it's their responsibility to ensure that the businesses are able to respond to those requirements in an efficient, effective manner, that the information they provide is accurate. And for a lot of organisations, there are huge challenges around that. There are challenges from a technology perspective. there are challenges around just the way that the data they hold changes over time, and the processes that act on it change over time, and being able to pull all this into a usable data set for a data protection officer is a huge challenge.
Okay, great. So, Ben, question for you. So, how would you recommend organizations and data protection officers tackle this task?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, really? It's not hopeless, though. I mean, there are some basic foundations that the DPOs can start to put in place to address this. And the first of those is policies. So any organization will have policies, whether these are around business policies or HR policies, recruitment, expenses, operational policies, InfoSec, IT, what people can do with their laptops, with their mobile devices. And really, they need to start ensuring that these policies adhere to the requirements of GDPR. The second foundation is the controls that are put in place around these policies. So they need to make sure that these controls enable them to operate in line with GDPR. So anything that the company mandates to ensure that PII data is properly captured, handled, shared, destroyed. From a technology perspective, this could be around encryption technologies. From a business perspective, this could be, I mean, if you take something like a recruitment process, and online, as a lot of recruitment is these days, that's fairly easily managed. So a CV, for example, is submitted online. The number of people who can access that should be restricted, and that's pretty easy to do with technology. But if you think about when that process goes offline, so someone mails in a copy of their CV to the post room, they get the addressee wrong, they get the wrong name of the person in HR, suddenly that's being opened by a temp or a contractor in the post room, and immediately they've got access. If you think about a CV, they've got access to probably certainly name, address, probably date of birth, which is probably enough for some kind of identity theft or spoofing. They might have things like passport number in there as well. So these processes can be risky. But a simple control that you could put in place to mitigate that type of risk is banning camera phones from the post room. So it doesn't have to be a complex solution to a complex control to the issue, but the DPO does have to start thinking about those risks and putting those controls in place to mitigate those risks. The third foundation is around processes, so defining how the business operates, supported by often one or more IT systems, so they need to be refined to ensure that the controls that I've just talked about are applied appropriately to those processes. And the last thing is data, and this is obviously central to GDPR and how PII data is controlled. So ensuring that a suitable, robust, high compliance position is maintained. And this information needs to be continually monitored so that to changes to any of the above, whether it's the information or the policies, needs to be audited, and then the reports on that need to be made available on request to actually confirm and demonstrate compliance with the ICO.
Yeah, wow. So, Stuart, that sounds like a pretty big undertaking, doesn't it?
I think it can be daunting for a lot of DPOs, if we're honest, especially large enterprises where the IT estate has evolved organically over time, where for many years it's been more than acceptable for somebody to extract a report from a system, collate data from many systems into a data warehouse, extract all the reports from those, email them to somebody who then puts them into an Excel spreadsheet, subsets the data, adds to it, emails it to somebody else, all of which is a business process. It's probably something that happens on a fairly regular basis, but isn't necessarily documented, tracked, controlled, or managed in any effective way. And just trying to capture and collate all of that information, I would suspect, is a huge challenge. And I think in the IT world, we've done a great job in some areas. So the ability to encrypt, mask, pseudonymize data, the ability to ensure that we put controls on devices so that you can't exfiltrate data inadvertently, the fact that we've got every device that connects to a corporate network generally has anti-malware on it, etc. So we've done some really good stuff. But I think we focus very much at the technology controls layer I don't think we've necessarily tried to focus on how the DPO has to deliver a compliance program that has the potential for a lot of organizations, especially in areas like retail that run on very, very small margins. If a retailer happened to be hit by the biggest potential fine, 4% of global annual revenues, that could be catastrophic to an organization. I'm not suggesting the ICO would necessarily, in anything other than the most extreme circumstances, leverage a fine like that. But I think the DPO has to work on the assumption that it's possible, and they have to consider the ramifications of that. And when they start to do that, the challenge of being able to respond with the necessary management information that allows them to not only improve the way that the business addresses the capture, handling and removal of PII data, but also how they are able to demonstrate to the ICO that they have a good understanding of where the risk is on the estate, that they are actively working to introduce new controls, that there's a timeline for improvement, and therefore there is an active program of work to increase compliance. Is something that I think we've perhaps not necessarily addressed from an IT perspective before. And I think certainly prior to the legislation becoming live last year, the approach from an awful lot of organizations seems to have been one of throw bodies at the problem, get a load of data scientists involved, find out where the data is, create a lot of static reports, and then produce an audit report for consumption externally. The day after the report's produced, it's almost irrelevant because the organization's changed. The consent that you have for the data set that you hold is no longer valid. You know, some people will have immediately asked for the data to be removed, but you can't do that. The consent's changed. You will have new customers, you'll have new employees, you'll have new partners that you work with. The data won't be in the original report. The consents won't have been tracked or managed. So it isn't about understanding where the data is necessarily. It's about understanding how the business processes the data in real time, and the ability at a snapshot. And remember, the ICO can audit you at the drop of a hat. Internal auditors can choose to just run an internal audit at the drop of a hat. And the DPO is the person at the sharp end of that conversation, always. So from our perspective, I think the real focus now needs to be very much on supporting the organization's DPO function to be able to run a compliance program in the most efficient and effective way possible. And in many respects, once you've been able to identify where the risk is and articulate the consequences of the risk to the board, it becomes a much easier conversation for the DPO to have to support IT and other processes in modernizing environments, in changing processes, and driving a compliance process. And the ability to articulate that in reports and graphics and other things that are easily digestible by C-level representatives in the organization is of huge value.
Very interesting. So I'm sure there's going to be one or two DPOs wondering where to start. So, Ben, what recommendations would you have for any DPOs listening to our show today?
Oh, interesting. Well, it's all about their process and their experience, really. And obviously, organizations differ greatly in the types and the amount of data they actually collect. If you look at a startup, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's a greenfield site where they're building these systems, they're building these processes from scratch. So in a lot of ways, they may have an easier time of it from a data perspective, not necessarily the thought around the processes and the grown-up bits around that, but certainly from the data point of view, because they won't have the patchwork of IT infrastructure that grows up in more mature companies, where they've got legacy systems, current systems, systems that are overlapping, and there's very few people within the organization who actually know where all the data is, what all the types of data are, and how to find it. But either way, doing nothing is obviously no longer an option, and DPOs need to start seriously thinking about the approach that they're going to take to address this. And clearly, I'm going to suggest at this stage that Oracle Consulting have something that may be able to help them out on this.
All right. So can you talk a little bit about how Oracle can support them on that journey?
Well, so one of the solutions that we've come up with in the last year or 18 months is called GDPR Smart. And there are really two aspects of this. The first aspect is around policy compliance. So mapping the policies within and the procedures within the internal organization with the GDPR policy. So it's a tool that allows them to go through GDPR line by line and map that to their internal policies to see where they're compliant and where they're not. So if we look at the example we talked about earlier, the post room example, where they put a ban on having camera phones within the organization, or within the post room rather, they can map that back to the individual bit of the GDPR policy, which talks about capturing sensitive data as it comes into the organization potentially. The second part of GDPR Smart is more around the IT aspect, the data discovery. So I mentioned earlier the older organizations with the data in a number of different pots, in different databases, in current and legacy systems. So what GDPR Smart will do is actually reach out to those systems, have a look at the data in them, and then make an analysis of the different types of data that's captured, of whether they're just generic non-PII data or whether this is PII data which needs to be managed in accordance with GDPR. So they're the two aspects of it, and that's something that we're talking to our customers to at the moment to help them out with their GDPR compliance challenge.
Excellent. So it sounds like Oracle has a really good solution there in GDPR Smart from what I'm hearing.
Well, I hope so.
Excellent. All right, well, do you have any final advice or recommendations you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I think from my perspective, it would be whatever you do, do something. This is not a piece of legislation that is going to go away, and it isn't one that is going to be impacted in any way by Brexit. Equally, it also affects organisations that are not EU or UK-based. If they hold EU citizen data, those organisations are equally liable under the legislation, hence the Google and France fine that we discussed previously. And I think the other thing that I would say is it is easy to be overwhelmed by it. And I think if you break it down into those four key areas of, yes, absolutely, you need to understand where the data is. That's fundamental to this whole piece, and data discovery is a huge element in your compliance journey. But more importantly, it's understanding the processes that act on that data, understanding the controls that have been enabled within those processes, and then being able to align all of that back to a set of business policies. And then measure the risk against those elements of your organisation that will then give you the opportunity to see where the issues are. You might have controls defined, but they might not be enabled within a process. You might have a technology control that you know you need to enable within an application, but you can't because you need to address the application because it doesn't support that particular type of technology. And when you have the visibility of that information, it becomes far easier then to put remediation work plans in place to allow you to start to improve on the compliance position. And once you've done that, it becomes far easier for you to articulate to the auditor that you have an awareness of where your data is. You understand how you act on it. You can appreciate that there are risks in 3, 4, 5, 10 different areas, but you're actively seeking to reduce that risk. And as a result of seeking to reduce the risk, you're taking further actions to monitor those high-risk areas more prudently than you would have done previously, and therefore reducing the likelihood of the risk being realised. And to a certain extent, I was chatting to Ben a little bit before today's session. You've kind of got to think about this. Perhaps an analogy would be a Formula One car engine. The engineers know that they're all going to blow up, and they spend their entire time monitoring every aspect of the engine to reduce the stress on it to make sure that it gets to the end of the race. And if it blows up on the cooling down lap at the end of the race, they've done their job perfectly. And to a certain extent, what we're trying to do is give the DPO a similar kind of view on the risk inside their organization. The DPOs are all sitting there knowing that the likelihood is at some point they're going to have to respond to either a breach or an audit non-compliance. And we're trying to give them the tools to be able to focus on the highest risk areas to ensure the likelihood of that is reduced as much as possible.
4% of global turnover. Not profit, turnover. Don't have nightmares.
Great point, and great advice. Great examples and great advice. So I want to thank you both for bringing the never-ending tale of finding the chinks in an organization's GDPR armor to HCM Cloud Talk Radio, and for coming on the show today to share this great information with our listeners. It was a pleasure having you both on the show today.
Thanks very much. Pleasure being here.
Thank you.
And if you would like to learn more about GDPR and how GDPR Smart may be able to help, please visit the Oracle Consulting blog by going to the shortened URL, bit.ly/3(1)xe. And read the blog post titled, Improving Your GDPR Journey. And if you have any comments or questions about today's show, or if you have ideas for future shows, please go ahead and send us an email at hcm-cloud-talk-radio_ww@oracle.com. It'd be great hearing from you. Thank you for listening to the never-ending tale of finding the chinks in an organization's GDPR armor. We hope you enjoyed the show and you can take advantage of this new service for your Oracle Cloud service. I'm Frank Howell, and you've been listening to HCM Cloud Talk Radio. Please join us again soon on another HCM Cloud Talk Radio show. Until then, take care.